Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, it is Thursday, September 11th, 2008. This is your host, Doug Kelly, here with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rubendunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. Welcome, everybody.
How's it going? Yeah.
It's going great.
September 11th, man.
Yeah, hard to believe it's been 7 years already, huh?
Yes, it is. Yeah, I just was thinking about that. You know, this morning at 9 o'clock, my time, just thinking, you know, where were you 7 years ago?
Yep.
I guess we all probably know, kind of like Kennedy and the Challenger space shuttle.
Yep. For those of us that are old enough to remember, and for the younger folks, this will be their Pearl Harbor, and they'll most certainly remember this.
Yeah, really. So tonight we are trying out something a little bit new. We are not using Skype tonight. And we are using a new alternative called Uvoo, O-O-V-O-O. And we've been testing it a little bit, and so far it's been working out really well. And I think the sound is a lot clearer, I should say. And so we're going to be using that tonight because we have had just a couple of weeks of hell with trying to keep Skype online and all that. So let us know what you think of the sound quality in the chat room. And hopefully more folks will be rolling in here shortly. If you'd like to get in on the conversation tonight, we'd love to hear from you. You can type in the chat room, or you can give us a call at 347-945-7799. And if you look, there's a little button on your window there that says click to talk. You can click on that if you've got a headset on your computer, and it's free. So you can call in and talk to us that way as well. Now, tonight we had a guest lined up, Jason Martell, and we're going to talk about ancient astronauts and structures on Mars. Haven't been able to connect with him. I know he wasn't feeling good today, but we'll give him the benefit of the doubt, and maybe we'll be hearing from him soon, but right now we don't have a connection with him. So we have a backup plan here. Grant's going to sing for us.
Well, Doug, I'm afraid that may not happen. I thought that I don't recall talking about this before we went on the air. So, can we kind of regroup on that one?
Sure. I probably don't want to hear you sing anyway.
No, I don't think so. I don't think our audience would either. But I got to tell you, I'm really liking this new system that we've got because it seemed like Skype was focusing on dropping me every 10 seconds or so. And, you know, we had discussed this, and, you know, we were tired of apologizing to our audience and our guests because it was just a real tough situation. And, of course, you know, we really want to present the best program possible to our audience, the folks that are kind enough to listen to us every week, and also, more importantly, to our guests.
Yes, and it was just hell. I mean, the last couple of weeks I was calling in, reconnecting everybody. I know one week, a couple of weeks ago, it was at least 10 or 12 times, and it was just, you know, you got to connect with everybody, so hopefully with this new software, we can avoid the dropouts. That would be so beautiful. What we're going to do is we're going to do this. We're going to talk about some different things. We're going to invite your comments. It's like an open phone thing. So give us a call. The numbers are on your screen. You can even click on that button that says click to talk. And that's free if you've got a headset for your computer. We'd love to talk with you. We'd love to hear what you've got going on with you. Our conversations are usually pretty interesting, so don't bail on us yet. Even if you're listening to this on the archive, hang tough because there's bound to be something to learn from here. All right. One of the things that I want to announce that we've been working on for the last week or so is a new database. Now, this is a Paranexus catalog of anomalous events. That's the technical name. But what it is, it's a database of paranormal activity. We've actually been wanting to do this ever since the inception of Paranexus last winter. And so now we've finally got some software we're working on. We're not ready to release it yet. I did mention it in the newsletter today, but we are going to release it probably in a week or so. There's some really interesting things about it, and what I'd like to do is invite Mike Jones to call in. If you want to, Mike, use that click to talk, or we can bring you in on the conference. It's up to you. Just let me know in the chat room how you want to connect. And he's been helping me. In fact, I'd like to announce that Mike Jones is joining the staff of Paranexus. He's in Arkansas in the greater Little Rock area. I don't think I talked about this last week, but if I did, then bear with me. I'm blonde.
No, I don't think you did.
We just did this a few days ago, but I remember talking.
Yeah, we're really
about
lucky to have Mike to come on board with us. You know, he's going to be a real asset, and I'm looking forward to working with him. I'm sure the other members of Paranexus will feel the same way. He brings a lot to the table.
Oh yeah, and he's been a real. A great help on this database. I mean, he's just done a fantastic job. He's got a real knack for the computer thing. So he's going to be our technical development coordinator for Paranexus, and we're lucky to have him for sure. He's calling in. We're going to talk. I want to wait for just a moment to talk about this database until we get Mike in on the show here.
Yeah, tell him what we're collecting that data
here
on, too, Doug.
I'm going to add him. I can just see. Hey, hang tough, Mike. Go ahead and talk for a moment, Grant. Let me add Mike in.
Sure. You know, folks, we're hoping to build up a really serious database on alien abductions and folks that want to share the experiences with us. Mike and Doug have worked really hard on it. The site's looking really good, but we want to have it looking the best we possibly can when we get ready to give you guys access to parts of it. And, we're really excited about that. We've also talked about the possibility of anybody who has information in regards to, alien abductions. If you are an abductee or if you're a whistleblower or somebody that has inside knowledge, we welcome you. We're going to be setting up an area in Paranexus so that you can communicate with us. And, we're just really excited about the possibilities.
All right, good. So we've got Mike on the line with us now. Hey, Mike, how are you?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, it's good to have you with us again, Mike.
Yeah.
Good to be here.
So Mike's been helping out with this UVU Skype alternative as well. So it sounded pretty good to you before you got on the air, Mike?
Yeah, it's a definite improvement. I'm getting good sound quality, nice and clear, which it's amazingly different.
It certainly sounds good from our side, too.
Yeah, and we've also got the video conferencing going on at the same time here, so we're looking at each other. That's not a pretty sight. All right, so let's talk about this database. Mike, you were bringing up some very interesting things about it last night when we were talking. Can you repeat some of those things, why you think it's of benefit to paranormal researchers?
Well, the first thing I want to point out is if you'll go to any research site, they individually specialize in their own databases. not one of them, to my knowledge, has actually combined databases so they can cross-reference. And in that, what you end up doing is you'll start seeing trends and actually seeing data that actually might have something to do with the human perspective on reality.
Well, the interesting thing is the ability to cross-reference paranormal phenomena among different venues, you know, such as parapsychology, cryptozoology, ufology, even abductions.
Correct.
And
correct.
Yeah. And so, you know, are there any commonalities? Are there any of the same stuff that's happening? Like, for example, one of the big things with ufology is that a lot of UFO events, especially with abductions too, will result in some sort of PK events, psychokinesis. And, I mean, we've experienced those too in our research. So it'd be interesting to know if any of this stuff overlaps. And so that's what this database is all about, is the ability to collect data and to share it. And so just for those of you joining us, the database is probably going to go online here in about a week or so. And it's going to have the ability to submit reports. We're going to be able to take online reports as well from just visitors, and then we'll add it to the database. And anyway, we're going to do that, and then we're going to also have Paranexus members who will be approved to be able to submit reports from their research and so forth. So we can get that database growing. We can get a lot of information in there, and it's searchable, and that's the beautiful thing. Anybody can come to the site. They can search the database for different phenomena, and it's so detailed. There's so many different search fields and parameters that we're trying to collect. So it's going to be a huge benefit to the paranormal community, I know.
Yeah. And to my knowledge, as far as I know, guys, and I've looked, this is going to be the first one in the world to actually go active. So that's kind of an exciting point to make.
Yeah, and the great thing about it too, fellows, is the fact that, you know, once we collect that data, like you mentioned, Mike, we'll be able to cross-reference so that if people have similar sort of experiences, we're going to be able to actually see that and, you know, and draw some comparisons, because everybody, you know, who's familiar with abductions or the UFO phenomenon knows that there are themes that seem to run through these experiences. And we're interested in looking at some aspects of abductions that don't necessarily make it to the light sometimes. And I'm not going to specify what we're looking for in particular, because we'd like to kind of keep that to ourselves for a while to make sure that some of the similarities or to examine similarities.
That's correct.
Yes. And we just want to invite our listeners to join in the conversation. Love to take your calls. The numbers are on your screen, 347-945-7799. You can also use that click-to-talk button. If you've got a headset on your computer, you can use that to call in for free. We'd love to hear from you. Just to reiterate, we had a guest lined up, and we just haven't been able to get a hold of him for the interview, so perhaps send him an email and left a message and all that, so hopefully he'll be able to tune in with us at some point. But we're going to talk about some different things. One of them was the Paranexus Catalog of Anomalous Events, which is the database that we're building. It should be online in about a week or so. So, Mike, thanks so much for coming on and talking about that, and you know, as we get into it, if you want to talk about anything else, let us know.
Okay. I'll be
all right,
listening
man.
In.
All right. Take care.
All right. Thank you. Take care, Mike.
Okay. One of the things I wanted to talk about, too, and it might be of interest to some folks, is a cryptozoology class I've been taking. In fact, two or three of us have been taking it. It's through the Pangea Institute with Scott Marlowe. I don't know if you're familiar with Pangea Institute, but they have a great website. He has a great website. He's been doing this cryptozoology for about 35 years, and he's really got a lot of interesting things to add, and great course. It just started, so we're about in week two here. But one of the things I wanted to mention is there's a book, one of the books we're reading as part of the course is the book Cryptozoology, Science and Speculation by Chad Arment. It's an interesting read. I'll just begin reading it. Some parts a bit complex, but there is something that he did mention that really resonated with me, I guess is the way that I want to say it. And that is on the topic of belief. And I'm going to have Mike mute your microphone, if you would. Thanks, man. The topic of belief. And one of the things that he made the point of is, and I love this, and it really resonated, and it helped me to crystallize some of my thoughts, is this, that belief and disbelief are two sides of the same coin. Now think of that for a moment. I've been basically saying the same thing for years. Belief and disbelief are two sides of the same coin. You know, if you believe, you believe. If you disbelieve, then you have still a form of belief. But another thing, interesting thing that he mentioned, and love to hear anybody's comments on this, is that skepticism is not the halfway mark between belief and disbelief. It's a very interesting thought, isn't it, Grant?
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, I think at the farthest end of the spectrum, you get people like Michael Shermer and folks that they're not even open-minded about it anymore. They're so rigid in their belief system that they don't even accept the slightest possibility that there could be things that they're missing. And so I guess,
well,
it depends on where you're at on the spectrum.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing that gotta just keep pounding in, is that when we go on investigations, when we do research, and it doesn't matter the venue, it doesn't matter the field, when you do research, we've got to go in with an open mind and without predisposed beliefs, without any preconditioning. You go in with an open mind, you neither believing nor disbelieving, just collect the evidence and see what you've got. I just can't emphasize it enough. We all over the community, we see people who are believers or disbelievers. They're either absolutely believe in it or they absolutely disbelieve in it. And that's where the debunkers and the skeptics come into play.
Well, you know, the other really interesting thing too, Doug, is like in our investigations, and I know we've talked about this on our forums, that, you know, think of the times that we've gone out and done investigations, in particular haunting investigations, and Doug does a wonderful presentation on belief systems, but you know, we've gone to investigations, for those of you who are actually doing haunting investigations, and have found virtually nothing that we could put our finger on that would indicate that there's some sort of paranormal activity going on there. And the fascinating thing is, and I know this will resonate with you, Doug, is we've been on more than one investigation where we've advised our clients of the fact that we have not come up with anything that we could hang our hats on. And it's absolutely incredible how they will cling to their belief system that their place is haunted, when in reality we can find nothing conclusive that would indicate that to be the case. Right, Doug?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I just talked to somebody tonight, a researcher, and called me up and curious about how to approach a particular case. And I didn't get a chance to tell you about this, Grant, but basically here's what's gone on. A particular group, this researcher was contacted by a friend of a friend, so kind of she kind of knows her, but not very well. And the story is that this gal had a group come in, do some research, do an investigation. They found they found some interesting stuff and basically felt like it was haunted. They got rid of some spirit. But now the complaint on the part of this client is that she's being sexually assaulted at night to the point of having bruising in her groin area. Now, what do you make of that?
Wow, that's pretty medieval, I would say. You know, it's like the incubus or the succubus. That's pretty wild.
I think that's a succubus.
Yeah.
You know, but think about that. Now, if you look at it, you know, it sounds dramatic. It sounds amazing. And yet, honestly, how often do we come across that kind of a thing?
Pretty rare, I'd have to say, in my experience.
You see that kind of stuff on TV, but you know TV. Anybody who's been involved with that knows a lot of it is drama and sensationalism. Can say that. Sensationalism and hype. Now, could it happen? Sure. But before we start searching for a paranormal conclusion, we got to look at the obvious. And, I mean, Grant, you already know where we're going with this. You know, what's the psychology? I mean, think about that. Somebody's being essentially assaulted to the point of bruising. You know, what's, in my mind, what's some of the most, you know, the easier conclusions rather than some succubus?
Yeah,
what would you think?
I don't know. That's a real tough one. And, you know, as you know, I'm really reluctant to look at anything like that unless you really get a chance to go out and talk to the person so you can kind of size them up. But that's so out of the mainstream sort of stuff that we deal with. That's a real hard call. But, you know, as Doug likes to say, my spidey sense would tell me that there's got to be some sort of underlying psychological issues that may be causing her to feel that way. But once again, unless you're there and you meet with a client and you get a chance to do a preliminary evaluation or assessment, who knows?
That's
really a tough call.
Yeah, we don't know all the things related about it. But, you know, you look at these, and that's the reason I'm even talking about it is because how often do we get calls like this? Well, this is happening. I mean, I got a call a month or so ago, and you're aware of this, Grant, about the client was on a roof fixing some gutter. Meanwhile, her little 2 or 3 year old boy is playing in the backyard. They apparently live very close to a pond, and she sees him physically dragged into the pond while she's working by some unseen force, and he's even got bruises on his ankles. Okay, then she says that she went inside. She's very upset about it, and check the chat, Grant.
Yeah, I see.
She was very upset about it, and she even was pushed down with and grabbed by the neck and had bruise marks on her neck. And, it, you know, come to find out that there's a long history of dysfunction in her family because other groups have been contacted by this person. But, you know, you get to the point where there's bruising, and you know, I got to tell you, the first thing that makes me worried is that there's some abuse going on. You know, I mean, far more people are bruised and assaulted by people than by spirits. You know, that's just
I'd say
that's
so.
Life.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the thing that was so, you know, because before we, you know, this person seemed to be in crisis, and before we even, you know, made a decision to go out there, you know, we networked with other groups in the area, in her immediate area, to see if anybody had any contact with this lady. Because those of you that do investigations like us, our colleagues out in the field, we most definitely want to help folks. And we don't want to leave anybody in a situation where they're feeling super distressed. But by the same token, you know, it was a considerable distance from our headquarters, and, you know, we wanted to make sure that we weren't making a trip that, you know, was going to end up where nothing was found. And the one thing that we kind of talked about beforehand was, in this particular situation, if I believe correctly, the client lived in a condominium association, and you would think that somebody would have seen a young boy being dragged other than this person who claim to have seen
Actually, that was a different case. This one was an old house that was apparently disrepair. And it's so interesting because if you look at the psychology, these are little red flags to keep in mind when you talk to clients, okay? When I talked to her extensively, now here are some of the issues of this. Number one, she did not contact us. Her sister did. Okay, so the client did not contact. That's important to know. Okay, and when I replied by email, they contacted me by email, I replied, and then the next day I got a phone call from her sister who initiated the call and then handed the phone to her. Then I talked to her. She seemed pretty normal. I went through all the questions. They had no, there was no alcohol issues, there was no drug issues, there was no fighting. Her and her boyfriend had been together for 5 years, never fought. They had really a good relationship. They had no money problems. You know, the whole picture was absolutely beautiful. They had no problems except for this. They had no prior paranormal activity. And so, you know, she's in tears. She's wondering what's going on. She's scared to death. And so, you know, there are kids involved. We said, okay, this was like a Thursday that I talked to her. And I said, get me your contact information, because I didn't have hers. I had her sister's. And I said, get it to me right away. I'll get some people together. We'll come out Saturday night. And so I got, you know, some people together trying to figure out what to do with it. And we got some people who could do it. And she didn't get back to me. And so Friday morning, I called her, tried to call her sister. And finally got a hold of this client at her father's house, and she told me that they were moving out Saturday, and the whole place is going to be a mess, and it probably wouldn't be of any benefit to come. So, interesting dynamics at work here. Now, I don't know all of the things, but here's why I'm suspicious of this case. Number one, she did not initiate the call. Somebody else did it for her. It was like her whole family was taking care of her. So there's some red flags on dysfunction there. Then it's like she was making up this story to not only cover for what could have very easily been her boyfriend's abuse, but also to get the sympathy of her family. And when push come to shove and her sister hands her the phone and makes her talk to me, essentially, she had to keep the story going. And then when we say, yeah, we'll come out and we'll do it, rather than get caught up in it, she decides to get out of the house. It gives me a story where her landlord kicked her out even though they'd been in the house for 30 days. So, you know, the whole thing sounds fishy, Grant.
Well, you know, Doug, I think, you know, we can't emphasize to our fellow investigators out there, or maybe for folks that are new, that are just starting a group and it's starting to, you know, to get into the field, how important it is to really, you know, do your research first. I can't emphasize, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, the importance of doing that preliminary assessment. It's so important to do a face-to-face. And, you know, you and Doug and I and the team, the Spirit Team and Paranexus, have recently changed our whole format in terms of how we approach an investigation. And one of the we had talked about this and kicked it around for a while, rather than have a whole bunch of folks go out there and just start up a full-blown investigation, you know, we have minimum amount of team members. We may have three people at the very most to go out on an investigation. And I think, from my personal perspective, I think that works a lot better. I think it tends to be less disruptive to the family. It also gives us a better handle as to what's going on when we sit down and we look at the family, we look at the home, we look at the whole entire circumstances. And, you know, on more than one occasion now, and I know you'll agree with me, Doug, that's been enough to make an assessment of the place. And I mean, it's not been anything about walking around with EMF meters or setting up tri-fields. It's been more doing a people evaluation and just getting some feedback from the folks. We did an investigation in the Sarasota-Bradenton area about a month and a half ago, which was really, really interesting. And some of our chapters have used the tape, which is another thing we started recently. We tape all of our preliminary assessments, which we find is a useful tool, and some of our other chapters or our alliance partners have also found it an excellent tool to help train folks. So, but in this particular investigation, it was another case where we were called out by another party other than the ones that lived in the home that was supposedly haunted. If you recall, Doug, there were
a lot of issues
in that.
Right. She owned it, but it was actually somebody else that was having the issue, the person that lived there.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that was interesting about that particular investigation was if you looked at the dynamics, and, you know, I would strongly encourage all of our colleagues out in the field to, you know, sometimes you don't even need to talk. A lot of times a better approach is simply to sit back and listen. And it will all unfold in front of your eyes. And in this particular case, we had what I like to term an external control freak who wanted an individual, that family member, to coincide with what they felt was best for that person. And as a result, it was that kind of external control freak who was kind of fueling the fire of this whole situation. Wouldn't you say, Doug?
Yes, absolutely. And that's another thing that we made it a point to do. We did interview them together in the beginning, but then I separated them, or, you know, we separated them, but I took the one who'd called and I took her into a different part of the house and talked to her and let Grant continue the interview with the person who was actually experiencing these stuff. But that's the whole point of this, the psychology of it. This topic, I can't emphasize enough how important it is to rule out the psychology of the client before you start looking for a paranormal conclusion, because honestly, most of the time there's a lot of psychology involved. Doesn't mean that it's always responsible for everything. You can have psychology involved and have paranormal events occurring, but especially if you suspect that you've got some PK events or RSPK, poltergeist events happening, look at the psychology. What's going on with the client? What's going on with the person? You know, look at all those different things. Is there stress in their life? Is, you know, dysfunction going on? Because when you've got that kind of RSPK events going on, there's almost always an agent. And it's very often a female, but not always, but very often in her teens.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that we've kind of directed our clients to do, and I think a lot of folks, you know, in order for you to have a successful investigation, you really need those folks to buy into your type of methodology. And one of the things that we found that really has been very successful for us is if you have a client and there is, if a question comes to your mind in regards to whether or not there is paranormal activity going on, at the time of that preliminary assessment, you can ask that client, like we do a journal for you. It doesn't have to be elaborate, but it places the onus on the client in terms of recording events, because as many folks are well aware of, if there is paranormal activity going on there, just our mere presence coming into that particular situation or scenario might cause whatever's going on there, if it is indeed legitimate, to kind of back away. Just our presence in the house or in the business or whatever it may be. So if we ask our clients to keep a journal, say over a two-week time frame, we may get additional information that's going to help us put together our staff or the people that we're going to need, our investigators, for when we go out and do a full-blown investigation. So
yeah.
I personally feel that it's absolutely essential that you put those pieces in place, and if you can keep it small, the number of people that you initially do those investigations or the assessments, I think you'll have a higher quality investigation if you need to do one. And plus, even if, and I know, Doug, you'll agree with me on this, and I'm sure members of our audience will as well, even if there's nothing paranormal going on there. The psychology in itself is absolutely fascinating.
Yes, it is. It's that's to me is one of the most fascinating parts of the whole thing, because you know you start doing paranormal investigations, and you pretty quickly find out that there's just it's not like TV. You're not finding a ghost under every rock, a demon in every corner. A lot of it is mundane. A lot of it is just uneventful, and you know you got to start looking at why. Why then are all there? Do all these reports happen? Where are they coming from? What's causing all this? And of course, the psychologists and the debunkers, you know, they say it's mass hysteria, hallucinations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, some of it could be that. But it's not all of it is necessarily. The human mind is an amazing thing. It can create all kinds of stuff. There can be just stress. Stress is a big one. Stress can cause all kinds of funky things. I mean, I sit here. I'll give you an example. I sit here in my office, in my home, and through the day, I'm be the only one here, and I'll hear a noise, a bang, something in the other room. And it's not just the house creaking. It's not the house settling. It's just there's a knock and a rap. And I honestly think that somebody's out there. You know, somebody's come home or whatever. I go out there and look. There's nobody there. The cats are all asleep. You know, there's no fans going. You know, nothing like that. And this happens constantly. And, you know, I look at that and think, what is that? I don't know what it is. Am I ready to say that it's some spirit trying to get my attention? Well, if they are, they're doing it in the wrong room. They need to do it in my room here in my office, you know, where I'm at. You know, knock on the wall here. Move something if you want my attention. So I'm not ready to go there. But those kinds of things can happen, and we may not always know why, but they're probably nothing and are easily explained.
Well, you know, too, Doug, think about the times, the investigations that we've gone on, and that an individual, say an individual is experiencing a lot of guilt, feelings of guilt in their life. And a lot of times, it just seems to me that sometimes the guilt that they may be feeling may become so burdensome that they need to find a way to externalize it. And I think that human beings are uniquely programmed as part of our own survival to sometimes project those feelings. And I can recall an investigation we did in Tampa about a year or so ago where it became very apparent when we came in to do our preliminary assessment that the lady that we were talking with was pretty burdened with a lot of issues surrounding guilt and feeling that that she could not be forgiven for what she had, whatever
right.
transgression she felt she had committed. And the interesting thing about it, and I know our audience will probably find this interesting as well, is it was a very nice home. It was in an upper scale neighborhood. And the minute we walked into the house, there were icons from every religious, whether it was Buddhism, Native American. You remember this, Doug? Various books on religion.
Christianity,
everything. So it became apparent just by looking at the, and here's the part that where it gets to be so fascinating is you're doing this detective work, you're looking around the surroundings, and here you have an individual who's completely surrounded themselves, obviously looking for answers and not finding an answer in any of it. And that's
yes.
very telling in itself, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, I felt sorry for that gal, and I actually spent couple hours on the phone at different times with her, just coaching her. And I'm talking about life coaching. I'm not talking about total paranormal stuff. I'm looking for the basis of this. And it was so obvious, Grant, that she did not have any demons. She only had demons in her head. And she was a nice gal. She made a good living. She had a nice place, and yet she was miserable. And, I mean, she was attractive. It was like she had everything going on right for her. But yet, it was that self-incrimination, or recrimination, I should say, that
yeah.
she couldn't find forgiveness because of corrupted belief systems and disabling belief systems. I mean, it was apparent. It was apparent. She had no self-esteem. And then you got to look back, what's gone on in her life, you know, to bring her to this point. Now, that's the purview of psychologists and therapists, but she definitely needed that. I can only hope that after my calls with her afterwards a couple of times that she sought out some help. I mean, there was one time she called me that, in retrospect, I believe she was out in her car. She was talking in her car. She had to leave her house because she thought it was so possessed, and it really wasn't from our investigation. And it's...
Well, you know, somebody said
I think she was considering offing herself. I really do.
Yeah, and you know, the thing of it is that somebody said that, you know, I can't recall who it was, and I'm going to paraphrase it, that madness or psychological distress was the product of an overstressed mind. And in that poor lady's case, you know, she was so burdened with guilt over situations that had happened in her life that it just became totally unacceptable for her. And it was really sad because as we did the preliminary assessment, this lady had a very nicely decorated home with some pretty neat, it was kind of like a Southwestern design and a color scheme.
Uh-huh.
And if you recall, Doug, she was seeing things in the paint, eagles and animals and things that were just like nobody else saw them. So she was looking for symbols, and that was a very, very telling sort of thing. And you know, we weren't there probably more than a half an hour, and we had a little conference off to the side, and we kind of said, wow. You know, this poor lady needs some assistance, and the type of assistance we're certainly not going to be able to provide her with the solution that she's seeking with just one investigation. Yeah. And, of course, as you well know, and I'm sure other members of our audience, if they do investigations, frequently when we come to a home to do an investigation or preliminary assessment, we come to find out that we're not the first people that have been there.
Yes. And that's the case, and that's another red flag to look for. It's another sign. If you get a call, be sure and ask them if they've had any other groups through there, because sometimes they will have every group and its brother through there because the groups are not telling them what they want to hear, and they're looking for a group to basically validate what they believe is already going on. So if a client has had several groups already in there, that's a red flag. You know, I mean, if they've had one or two over the last 5 years, okay, fine. But a lot of them have had groups within the last few months.
Well, you know, I'm sure that folks that, you know, like in the field of mental health, which is my primary occupation, we call it doctor shopping. And I'm sure that, you know, any members of our audience that may be in the medical field or on the periphery of the medical field have seen the same phenomena where people want an answer. They want an answer very badly. And a lot of times, if the one particular physician or a healthcare provider doesn't tell them what they want to hear, they're going to jump to the next person because they may tell them what they know deep down inside is the truth, but, you know, sometimes the truth doesn't set you free. Sometimes it's a prison for some folks, or it's something that they can't face, and it's real difficult for them. And, you know, as investigators, that's what we have to remember, to be compassionate and, most importantly, to be ethical, because the other side of that coin, Doug, as you well know, and I'm sure some of our other members in the audience is that type of a situation lends itself to that person being exploited by groups that aren't as ethical as many of our colleagues are in the field. And if you recall the investigation we did in, was it Fort Worth, Florida, where another group had come in and had encouraged, the lady was a lady of some means, and they encouraged her to purchase cameras and
DVR
video
system, surveillance system.
And when all was said and done, they came back about a month later and said, no, we didn't get anything, but we'll take the cameras. Thank you very much. And that was, to us, exploitation. And, you know, that is really unethical. It doesn't matter where you come from.
And and this lady had had psychics in there telling her that she had this bad, malevolent spirit in there, and she was convinced she did. We went in there. We honestly, that we had psychics going in there too, and they were picking up on a kind of a dark energy. But after all was said and done, their impression was that she was generating it. It was just a negativity from her. And after talking with her and looking at that whole thing, yeah, I'm inclined to believe that's where it was coming from. That's the point. Before we even think about getting rid of the demons in our house, we need to get rid of the demons in our head. We've got to make sure that we are not stressed, that we don't have disabling beliefs. And that goes for the client. Look for disabling beliefs. You can see little red flags. If somebody says, you compliment them, for example. I'm just giving you a what if. You compliment them. Oh, what a nice place. Oh, yeah, it's not as good as I want it to be, or not. Don't think it's that great, but I'm trying. Those are self-defeating comments. They are indicative of a person's inner state of mind. If they're putting themselves down, if they, all of those things, you got to take those into consideration. The look of the house, is it too clean? Is it like a Better Homes and Gardens, picture session or something? Or is it a cluttered, filthy mess? Does that mean that paranormal activity can't happen in either one of those? No, it just means that those are indicators. Look for disorder. That's the best way to put it. If you look for disorder, to see if that's causing any of this stuff, that can help. It can help you as in the groups out there to really hone in, zone in on what could be causing some of this alleged paranormal activity.
Yeah, and don't rush to a paranormal conclusion despite everything that you might see or that you might, that you might pick up. In that particular case, as Doug alluded to, we had three psychics with us that night, and not a one of them felt that there was anything that was really threatening to that poor lady. And when all was said and done, when we left that night, I thought, I don't know about you, Doug, but I kind of thought she was going to be looking for another group to come in to try to validate what she was saying. And unfortunately, I think that, there's probably somebody out there that will validate it for her. And that's a shame.
It is, because it just fuels their own fears and their own psychosis, if you will, their own damaging thinking. And I I'm not going to be a part of that. If somebody's got some activity, think that's going on, we'll go check it out. They might, but not all. Not it's never as bad as you hear it on the phone initially. I remember the first case we did years ago. There was a demon coming out of the mirror. There's a chair being thrown at a young boy. I'm thinking, holy crap! We're getting tested by fire
right out the
here.
Chute. Elemental right out of the chute, huh?
Exactly. there's nothing there. There was nothing there. It was superstition. It was hyped belief. The ethnicity of the client was steeped in superstition. Even she said that. And we basically explained, I want to say, several things that were haunting her for a long time, so to speak. And they were nothing. They were not paranormal. So there's just so many of these things. And that's part of Paranexus Charter, folks, is to educate and to encourage people to think for yourself. Look at this stuff. Don't think just because you see it on TV that, it's going to happen in the real world, because it just doesn't. It just doesn't happen like that. It's not that common. You get all these random sightings and reports of everything from ghosts and spirits to Bigfoot to aliens. There are cases out there that, it would seem legitimate, definitely. But there's so few and far between. And you know what? If you're looking for it, if you think that there's a whole problem with demons and fallen angels trying to get mankind away from God, then you're going to be seeing a demon in every corner. And that just isn't reality. I love Gregory's attitude, Gregory Kent, who's a psychic medium. He's been on this show and co-hosted this show. Yeah, he doesn't do demons, essentially. He just is, those are not part of his world. It's not that he's in denial or that he's, what am I trying to say? He doesn't
embrace that philosophy at all.
Exactly.
It's just
and,
as
you know,
simple
he,
as that.
Yeah, he recognizes that there are lower level entities, but he's not of that mind where, oh yeah, we got to go call a demonologist to exorcise the house because there's this wicked demon. I mean, you got to bring the rationality in. And my problem, I believed in demons for 40 years. I don't believe in them anymore. But I got to look at this and say, okay, could there be a demonic force out there? Okay, perhaps. What's its why? I mean, is its only purpose to bother people and to feed off of that fear? Is that their only purpose? A sentient being? It just doesn't make sense. You know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and the other thing too, Doug, is if you recall, getting to the power of belief, we went on an investigation over a year ago, and it was a real interesting case. Where it was a young couple, and they had an 18-month-old daughter, and there was some interesting things that they caught on video,
yeah.
Where the little girl would put the little girl to bed, and she would get covered up, and they weren't in the room, or the little girl would wake up and talk to somebody there, or appear to be talking to somebody, or cry, and you know, our psychics picked up on what they felt were some presence, but it wasn't anything that they felt was malevolent. It was more like nurturing, sort of kind of like a spirit,
right,
of a neighbor who might have come back, who died before the baby was,
right,
born, but had interfaced with the lady there during her pregnancy, and it was kind of a loving, protective a spirit, if anything. But what I found so interesting about that particular case, if you recall, Doug, was when we went to do what our colleagues, the ghost hunters, called
cleansing.
Reveal. Yeah,
right.
Well, we did the psychics of the cleansing, but you know, when we did the reveal to the client, one of the most interesting things he said to us that night was the fact that as a young man, he had messed around with the Ouija board or the black arts, and one of the things that he said to us was that he and a friend had gotten a hold of the Necronomicon. And that just sent up a red flag with me right away, because if anybody in the – I'm sure our audience must be familiar with the early 19th century or 20th century writer by the name of H.P. Lovecraft, who had a whole mythology, and part of his mythology was that there was this book of incantations and spells which was called the Necronomicon, which was totally fictional. And here we had,
mm-hmm,
a case of a young fella who actually believed that because he had been involved very briefly in doing some incantations or spells, that he was going to be somehow, there's going to be retribution for that. And at the time, basically told him, you know what, the Necronomicon is a fictional, it's part of a fictional story. So
yeah. But that gives us the clues. It goes right back to the whole belief system. And I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it again. Belief is the most powerful force and potent force in the universe. It started wars. It stopped wars. Belief is responsible for all of our successes and all of our failures in life. And just to clarify, the very act of using a Ouija board or, you know, doing some incantations – in and of itself means nothing. A Ouija board is a piece of cardboard with a planchette. It is nothing. It means nothing. Okay? The thing that gives it power is the same thing that gives anything in our life power, our belief. Those things only have the power in which we give them. It's like a sage. You know, saging your house, or using oil, or using holy water. Those things, in and of themselves, are nothing. They have no power in and of themselves. They only have the power that we give to them through belief. And that is it in a nutshell. That's why when you're on an investigation with a Christian family, you whip out the cross and the Bible and the holy water, and you do their thing. You get them involved in it so that they're buying into it. So that you're, in essence, whenever you try to resolve a haunting or any other activity, what you're trying to do, in essence, is to change the belief system of the client. You're trying to help them to evolve that belief system, to change it, to put it off going in a different direction so that this stuff stops, because that's where most of it is. Even if there is a true haunting, a spirit is there. Yes, it is moving things. It is showing up, scaring the bejesus out of us. It still all comes back to a person's self-belief. How else do you explain the fact that I can't even get the damn things to follow me home? And
yeah,
they're more than welcome
you've tried.
To. I know.
Left a trail for them of Burger King, double cheeseburgers all the way home.
That's right.
But, Doug, I think, too, the thing that's really important, and you just spoke to it very eloquently, is the fact that if they're Christians, help them use their belief system to empower them,
in
a healthy way. If they're Buddhist, if they're Wiccan, whatever, work with the client to help them use that to their benefit. Most importantly, if you can walk away from a situation like that and you've empowered the client, then you've won. Then that not so much that we've won. They've won. Everybody's a win-win situation for them. And you'll see it when you work with clients and the light comes on. They have that little epiphany. That's really a gratifying situation because, it's their home. And if they're in their own home, they need to understand that, it is their home and take their power back.
Exactly. There is no way in hell I'm going to be scared and frightened in my own home. That just ain't going to happen. That's my attitude. That's my self-belief. And since we view spirits the same way we view humans and we view entities, regardless of whether they're spirits, non-human spirits, interdimensional spirits, interdimensional aliens, ETs, you name it, I view them just like people. I imbue the same respect, but I also demand the same respect as I do from people. So therefore, as I teach assertiveness in some of my management classes, an assertive attitude is, I'm not going to walk on you. I'm not going to cross your boundaries. However, I'm not going to allow you to walk on me, and I'm not going to allow you to cross my boundaries either, because I know who I am, and I know why I am who I am. This is my home. And there's no way in hell I'm going to be afraid and frightened in my own home. And there's no way I'm going to allow anyone to violate my boundaries. And I don't care if I can see them or not. And if they try, they're going to be in trouble because it just ain't going to happen. Now, that's the energy I'm putting out. That's the energy you put out, Grant. It's the vibe. It's that psyche of who you are. So that it all comes back down to self-belief. And that's why in the CPI course, the Certified Paranormal Investigator course, that I spent so much time talking about a self-concept, a person's self-belief. Because if you go into an investigation and you think you're the filth of the earth and you're just no good and you're not worthy and all this other stuff, I'm not smart enough, I'm not educated enough, I'm this, I'm not that, whatever. If you go in with that,
you're
going to be a target. You're going to be a target. No different than a victim is a target of a bully in the schoolyard. You've got to look at that self-belief. And one other quick point on religious stuff. When you go into a house, make sure that you find out the religious persuasion of the client. Make sure that's part of your questionnaire. Because your religious position is absolutely irrelevant. And therefore, you don't automatically default to putting oil on the doors and St. Michael's medals on four corners of the yard and all this other stuff. You don't necessarily default to that. You got to find out what's going on and what you can work with their belief system.
And, it's also not only is the client belief system so very important, but the investigator's belief system has to really, I mean, this is a, the endeavors that we engage in require a great deal of self-reflection as to who you are and what you believe in. Because if you go into an investigation with preconceived notions already, that is going to, in my personal opinion, lead to problems. You have to go into an investigation completely open-minded, or if you feel uncomfortable with your personal belief systems, then you have to do the ethical thing, which is do not participate. And
do no harm.
Of the things that, right, exactly, that's our mantra, is do no harm. And, you know, all the information that we've kind of kicked around tonight, in lieu of the fact that, our guest, Jason, couldn't be here with us tonight, and we want to send out our, you know, apparently Jason had his family member had some medical problems, and we want to let him know that we'll be thinking about him, and, you know, we're sorry to hear that, because I know that he was looking forward to being on the show tonight, and we were really looking forward to having him as well. But, you know, the great thing about the upcoming conference that we're going to be having in October next month, which is one of the most gorgeous months in Florida next to May, is the fact that our workshops are going to be all about this, going to be all about the things that can help you. We don't think we are experts by any stretch of the imagination that we know everything there is to know. We believe in providing a forum so that folks can exchange ideas. We think that we have enough experience to make some pretty concrete statements about our approach to investigations. But, you know, the Paranexus Conference is going to offer the folks that attend it a great opportunity to take away or to put some more tools in their toolbox. Wouldn't you say, Doug?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the whole point of Paranexus, and it's an association of paranormal researchers. It's designed to help, to educate, to share knowledge, to not get into that whole petty political, you know, we're competitors, because we're not. We don't compete. We are allies. We're colleagues. And the Paranexus Conference is coming up in less than 2 months now. And it's in Tampa, October 24th and 5th. Go to paranexus.org for more info. We'd love to have you. We've got some great speakers. We've got some great activities. And not only is it a place to learn, but it's a place to have fun. It's a place to meet people, to meet your colleagues, and to share your stories, to share your research, to share who you are with people. That's what's going to make it so fun. Because, folks, when it's all done and said, it's about relationships. Even investigations are about relationships. I mean, you come into, there are times when we've basically met spirits, so to speak, and we help them to move on, but it's about relationships across the board, because we're all trying to understand the human condition better. We're all trying to understand the big questions of where we came from, why we're here, where we're going, the fundamental questions of life. And so we'd love to have you, because it's coming up quick here. And speaking of sharing knowledge, I want to reiterate for some of the folks that have joined us recently here that we are working on launching a new database site as an adjunct to Paranexus, and it's the Paranexus Catalog of Anomalous Events, where we're going to start building data across the board, parapsychology, ufology, cryptozoology, abductions, all of it. And you can cross-reference, you can search for your commonalities between alien abductions and haunting experiences, if there are any. And sometimes there are overlappings. So that's coming on. And we had Mike Jones on with us earlier, who's been helping a lot with that and doing a great job. And, you know, he was talking about how it's so unique it is. And I when he mentioned that, I thinking, yeah, he's right, you know. There might be something else out there. I'm personally not aware of it, but I don't know of one where you can go and offer data, submit data, and have it indexable and searchable. And it's open to everybody, you know. So we're excited about getting that online, and it's going to truly continue to make Paranexus the association to be a member of, because I truly don't think there is another group or association like Paranexus out there, and we're proud of that. We're trying to make it good, and we invite everyone's input and feedback. So
we want to welcome everybody and know that there's a place for them at the table, and also it's important for folks to understand that we welcome your feedback, and you've got the right to stand up and say whatever you believe in or what your opinion is, and without fear of being criticized. That doesn't mean that we have to agree with what you say, but you can bet that we'll at least listen, and we want to provide that forum. And of course, and plus, we feel that the emphasis of the essence of a good investigator, regardless of what area that you want to specialize in the field of paranormal research, the essence is an educated investigator. Mm-hmm. The more you immerse yourself, the more you learn, the more you network, whether it's with us, with other colleagues in the field, the better investigator you're going to be.
Yes. So we would love to have you at the conference. We've got a number of sponsors. I'm Haunted Radio, Spirit Team, of course, and The Shadows, of course, the Comfort Inn Conference Center in Tampa, who's hosting the conference, Daytona Beach Paranormal Research Group, Dusty, and Rick Del Rio is going to be there with his hats. That's going to be great. So if you want to be a sponsor, you want to be a vendor, we'd love to have you. If you want to just join us as an attendee, we'd love to have you there too. Let's just reiterate our guest tonight, Jason Martell, could not be with us because of the illness in the family, that he kind of an emergency thing. And so we're going to try and reschedule him in the upcoming month or two, because I really wanted to talk about structures on Mars and ancient astronauts and that sort of a thing too. So we're going to get him back on. We're going to cut the show short a little bit tonight. As always, you're welcome to call in or anything, but we haven't gotten any call-ins, so we're just going to start wrapping it. But I do want to tell you about what's coming up next week. Get to that. Let's see. Next week we've got Project Camelot. Now, there was some confusion on – we had them scheduled a couple weeks ago, but actually it was last week, wasn't it? And there was some confusion on the time and Bill Ryan being out in Switzerland and so that. So he's going to be in the States, and we're going to get them on. We're all ready to go with that on September 18th. That's a week from tonight. The best place to hide is out in the open. If you're familiar with Project Camelot with Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy, then you'll want to certainly be here next week. The week after, we've got Linda Fell back, psychic medium Linda Fell, empowering others with paranormal research. Following that, Robbie Thomas, who's a psychic. In October, we've got Excursions.
Got a great lineup.
Yeah, with Dale Kaczmarek. Alien Abduction Agenda with David Jacobs, PhD. If you are familiar with abductions, you'll know his name. He and Bud Hopkins have done a lot of work together. Week after that is the Paranexus Conference, but the end of October we've got Scott Marlowe from Pangea Institute. And again, if you're interested in any kind of a cryptozoology course, Scott's got a great one at Pangea Institute. There's a link on Paranexus, and it's a 10-week program I'm taking at $75, and I've learned some great stuff, so I'm looking forward to the rest of it. So anyway, folks, we appreciate you joining us tonight. We're going to wrap it up a little bit early.
Hey, Doug, could I just put a little
free.
We hope you are getting better reception with us tonight. Kind of switched, and we are trying a different type of system. And so far, the gods of our new provider seem to be serving us well. But folks, let us know. Give us some feedback, and don't ever hesitate to give us feedback. If you think that there's areas where we can improve, or you have an interest in the type of shows, or if you feel you'd like to be a guest on our show, simply contact us. Welcome you to come on board. We're always looking for guests, and we're really looking forward to seeing Project Camelot. If you're not familiar with their work, Carrie and Bill have done some fantastic stuff. They've run down a lot of whistleblowers, and they do some terrific work, and I would certainly encourage you to go to their website. And so we're really looking forward to having them next week.
Yeah, and, you know, again, if you have a message you want to get out, if you're a paranormal researcher and you've got some tips, tricks, and techniques for doing things and maybe in a unique way, or you've just got something you want to share, we'd love to hear from you. You know, even if you want to come on for an hour, we can try and work that in. So, we want to hear from people. If you have ideas for the show, we want to improve it, and we welcome your ideas. So help us out. And if you I think the UVU, which is the Skype alternative we've been using tonight, I think it's done fantastic. I'm impressed. And if you haven't
I haven't slipped off into the ether once so far tonight, Doug.
And we're running three videos. I mean, we've got Mike here on video with us, too. So we're using all this bandwidth much more than we typically use on Skype. And it's just UVU. It's O-O-V as in Victor, O-O. O-O-V-O-O.com, I believe, is what it is. So, I mean, and it's free, too, unless you want to go supersizing on it. But anyway, folks, we're not going to ramble on anymore. We really appreciate your joining us tonight. We hope that you'll join us again next week. And keep in touch, and we hope to see you in the Paranexus forums and at the conference. And with that, Grant, you have a great night, man. Good as always.
You too, Doug. It was a pleasure talking to everybody. And once again, we apologize for the problems we've had the last couple of weeks. We feel that we're well on the way to getting those rectified. And you know what? You can even contact us if you want to criticize us about something. We welcome your feedback, folks.
Yeah, contact Grant.
Yeah. No, directly to Doug Kelly. You know, that's no. But seriously, though, folks, we're big enough to take that criticism, and, you know, we can take it on the chin. So thank you so very much for your patience, and sorry about Jason not being here tonight, but he did have a family emergency. So everybody have a great weekend.
Yep, and thanks to Mike Jones, too, for coming on earlier. Take care, everybody.
Absolutely.
Good night.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
It's Paranexus Universe.